Give some your arms, boys. Come on, Shane.
Let's hear you meow.
Meow.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 degrees centigrade to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Nick and Shane? Can you feel it?
I can feel it. It's working.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, and the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-garment license. This allows reuse by anyone except for governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, anyway, yeah, welcome to the Freedom Fiends. I'm Lou, and I'm joined tonight by Nick, the anarcho-yactalist Hazelton, and we are bringing back Shane from Liberty Under Attack. Welcome back, Shane.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
And nice to talk to you again, Nick. It's been quite a while. I think the last time we spoke was probably maybe in August or something like that. I can't remember. It's been a long time.
I don't remember either. It's been a really long time, it seems. I haven't been on a microphone in a long time.
It sounds like you're trying to kick a habit.
Yeah.
How's life on the farm?
It's pretty good. Today was more exciting than most. Most of the time we're just doing tasks that we have to do, like building fences. But today I found out that my yaks have not been in my field for the last 3 days, which makes me sound like a pretty terrible yak owner. And that's probably true, but they were across the river at the neighbor's. My neighbor and cousin, he's a cattle rancher, and he has to graze his cows on our property sometimes, and the cows scared away the yaks, I think. And so the yaks were hiding across the river at the neighbors for the last 3 days, and we had to go get them. And I've been soaked and cold tonight, but that was fun. Yeah.
Well, at least you got them back.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, they're back home, and they're probably cold and wet too.
And so, you don't have that even one anymore that was like threatening to beat you up and take your lunch money, right?
No, he's gone. He's
okay.
Gone.
Did you sell him into yak slavery to some Tibetan monks, or
yeah,
was
we
that,
did.
Or did he get turned into bacon?
No, he was sold into slavery by the Buddhist Tibetan monks there in
okay,
California.
To the Buddhist Tibetan monks, and he was sold into slavery by you.
Yes.
Just want to clarify that. And what's going on with you, Shane? You were you recently did a little bit of Liberty Festing this past weekend, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yep.
All right.
Yep.
So
go ahead.
Were out in Virginia.
Correct. Yep. But it was Anarchon, which is a festival hosted by Liberate RVA. It was obviously a great. Yep. Go ahead.
That's Richmond, Virginia, by the way.
Correct. Yep. Yep. It was definitely a great time. I guess I'll start with the one of the most important parts, being on the road for probably 24 hours and didn't have any run-ins with the police extortionists. Unlike the first Midwest Peace Liberty Fest where they got me. they got me. So yeah, 24 hours versus 4, and I was successful in avoiding the extortionists. But yeah, it was definitely a great time. The Cove is a huge piece of property. I think it's like 1,600 acres, and they've got a shooting range. Unfortunately, I didn't get to partake in that. And even better, I enjoy riding four wheelers and side by sides and things, and they actually let you ride there. So I was talking to my co-host Jason. We might just take our machines out there next year and have fun in that manner. But there were about 30 people or so there. It was pretty small, but a tight-knit group. But I think I like the big group, like at the Midwest Peace Liberty Fest, but the smaller group was definitely good too, because I mean I got to talk to everybody like all weekend, so I did find that particularly valuable. Are you guys familiar with the Statism and Slavery page?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Mike Shanklin, the administrator for that, I think the creator of it, he was there. He's a really cool guy to hang out with. I didn't really know what to expect, but yeah, he was definitely a great dude to hang with. You guys familiar with Jake McCauley? He's pretty prominent on Fascist. He came out from Maryland, and a couple of folks from Richmond, from Liberate RVA that I've been corresponding with on Fascist Book, Carl Lozer and obviously Cal Molinay, who we've had on our show, a number of times. But yeah, it was good to reconnect with him. There was one interesting thing, and it was kind of a compare and contrast that I noticed, between the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest and Anarchon. Now, Lou, as you know, there were probably, at MPL Fest, there were presentations every day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and most of them happened on time. But at Anarchon, I think there are only two or three presentations. Oh yeah, they are. Oh yeah, I think only two or three presentations happened, and one of them was not mine. I was hoping to give my Freedom Umbrella of Direct Action presentation, but yeah, it didn't happen. It didn't happen.
All right, so it sounds like they're a little bit like my improvised fire starting presentation at this last year's Liberty Fest, which still hasn't really taken place.
Well, yes, actually,
I take that back, because somebody had come over and, it was raining cats and dogs on Saturday morning. The place was flooded. The kids had to come over to the center area where the bonfire was. They had to wear their water wings, but I didn't even bother doing the course at that time, and I think I wound up doing a little presentation later on that afternoon. Young lady came over with her kids and was saying, "Hey, when are you going to do the fire starting thing?" And I wound up doing it right then and there. So
yeah. Yeah, and it was kind of interesting too. The Saturdays were very, very similar between the two festivals. I mean, it rained all day, and it was pretty cold, which I think that has something to do with the amount of people that came out. I heard that Lisa was supposed to make the trip out, but I was disappointed that she didn't make it.
Yeah, she was sick this past weekend.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, she's been battling a cold. But anyway, so yeah, it's I really enjoyed meeting Cal at Liberty Fest a couple of years ago, and he seemed like a really nice guy, and I wanted to meet some of the Virginia folks. And last year for Anarchon, there were a few of the MPLC, Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition, people that made it out there, but it appears that nobody made it out there this year.
Yeah, I think when I got there, I think I knew like a handful of people tops. I think it was more like three or four, but I really just went in this one blind, just like I did the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest the first time I went.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what is this property on? They have 1,600 acres. It's like the anarchist version of Bohemian Grove, where you guys get together and sacrifice parking maids.
Well, it's called the Cove, and there's a bunch of different things there. Like it's really far off of the road. Like you have to drive like 10 or 15 minutes to just get back to where we were camping for the festival. But like right when you pull in, there's like a really intricate, like really well designed like Boy Scout camp. It was definitely
cool.
Beautiful. And then you just continue going back. They've got like 10 different campgrounds. Like I said, the shooting range, they have, I think it's a lake. They have a huge lake there. You could have gone canoeing. I mean, it was, you could have pretty much done whatever you wanted to. But yeah, it was a huge property.
Okay, so that sounds a little bit like Liberty Fest with the canoeing and the lake and everything else.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I was recently at Agora Fest, and it was a pretty good sized property. I don't know if the total space was larger than Circle Pines, but there was definitely a lot more open space there. And instead of a lake, they had a river, and there was a couple drops in there. So I wasn't really interested in doing the kayaking thing through there, because you know, it's not exactly class 5 rapids or anything like that, but it was definitely a little bit of a drop there and pretty good flow. So I think I would have had a heck of a time getting the kayak back up to the starting point. But so as far as the shooting range goes, the shooting range is part of the property, or was it separate or what?
No, it was there on the property. Yep, it was there on the property. Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't able to make it out, but I saw some of the pictures of the shooting range, and it's a pretty big shooting range. As with everything on that property, it's pretty large. And I think to give you a kind of an idea of just the campground that we were in, the Midwest Peace and Brief Fest, like the area around the main fire, I think you probably could have fit like 5 or 6 of those in the campground that we were in. So it was definitely big enough for 30 people. I think you could have packed like 500 people in that area and everyone would have been just fine.
Okay. How long were the ranges there? What was the distance for the rifle ranges?
That I do not know. I'm not sure.
All right. One of the nice things about AgoraFest was there was a range. I think it was a public range, or I don't know if it's government public range or private public range, but there was a public range not too far away, and there wasn't any charge to use it. And they had, I think, going out to 300 yards. That was pretty neat. But there were only a handful of us that went over to use the range, and I didn't bring any firearms with me. It completely spaced it. But a couple of the other attendees, matter of fact, listeners, had firearms out there, and they let some of the other people shoot them, and it was a pretty good time. We did a little bit of time on the handgun range and a little bit of time on the rifle range.
Oh, yeah, there were a lot of guns there, a lot of guns.
Nice.
And as you can imagine, the Agora Marketplace, there's some selling of ammo and such, but yeah, it was a lot of guns.
And of course, there was sacrificing young yak farmers that night, right?
Actually, I didn't see this myself, but there was someone that came there like 3 days before. Apparently, there were goats running around the property, so not necessarily yaks, but goats maybe. Yeah, goats is a possibility.
What about goat farmers or yak farmers? Were any of those sacrificed?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge.
All right. So about how many people do you think were there? I know it's not that big of an event yet.
No, there was probably 30 tops. 30 tops. And I really think the rain had a big impact on that.
All right. Yeah, same thing happened with Liberty Fest this year. The weather really nipped a lot of, a handful of people that I know. But anyway, we'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the road to freedom.
Fiendbot 3000.
Fiend phone.
Bipcot no gov.
Bad audio is a hate crime.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch, now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And, I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
Freedom Fiends. And we are back. And there's a documentary that I caught a glimpse of earlier today, the trailer for it, and is called Do Not Resist. And you can go to the show notes at freedomfiends.com if you're listening to this on the podcast. or if you're listening live on the radio, you can go to the website tomorrow. Check out the show notes on this episode, and the trailer will be linked inside there. And it's really interesting. The director of the film, he's from Detroit, and there's going to be a showing coming up. I believe it's on Friday, November 4th, and I won't be able to get down there for that. But there's going to be a showing at one of the theaters in the Detroit area, and there's going to be a Q&A with the director after that. And I really wish I could get down there, but it talks about the SWAT teams. And just to go with the beginning of the director's statement here, it says, in April 2013, I watched the police response in the days following the Boston Marathon bombing in awe. I had never associated the vehicles, weapons, and tactics used by officers after the attack with domestic police work. I grew up with the war on drugs era of policing. My father was an officer of 29 years in a city bordering Detroit and became a member of SWAT when his city formed a team in 1989. What I wasn't familiar with, since my father's retirement from the force in 2002, was the effect the war on terror had on police work. Making this film was an attempt to understand what had changed. Knowing that interviews with experts would do little to communicate the on-the-ground reality of American policing, we instead set out to give the viewer a direct experience. We attended police conventions throughout the country and started conversations with SWAT officers at equipment expos and a seemingly endless cascade of happy hours, offering the only thing we could, an authentic portrayal of whatever we filmed together. On more than one occasion, we were on our way to the airport, camera in hand, only to receive a call from our contact in the police department instructing us not to come. Our access seemed to be tied directly to the amount of negative press the police were getting at that time. It became increasingly difficult to get access after the events in Ferguson, and there were many times we thought we would have to stop production altogether. The urgency of the situation, however, motivated us to continue. Now, you boys have watched the trailer a couple times, right?
Correct, yep.
No.
All right, Shane, what was your impression of watching it?
Well, I mean, I haven't been a voluntarist this entire time, but even when I was a minarchist, I still saw, especially after the Boston bombing, I saw obviously the increased military presence and the lockdowns that they're instituting. This is no surprise to me, but I think the trailer, it looked like it'd be a pretty good documentary. The only contention I have is it seems like if you read the rest of the director's statement, you'll kind of get the impression that he doesn't want to privatize the police or anything. He just wants to make the police extortionists just a little bit cuddlier. And that's kind of the issue I had with it. But the trailer looked high quality, and I think it could be good for maybe shaking the neocons a little bit, or the conservatives, saying, "Hey, something's wrong here. Something's wrong here."
Well, the neocons have a tendency to love this because they have this fascination with militarism. They love to see guys in uniforms bearing down on other people, preferably liberals or people that are not neocons. And that just really gets them excited. I'm watching this trailer right now with the sound off, but to give you an idea of what you see in here, you have the Humvees lined up as if they're in like a military arrangement, getting ready to go out. You got these SWAT goons who are all buffed up on roids and everything else. You have one of the most interesting things is you got the guys out on the range, and they got the silhouette targets, they're called. It's the human-shaped targets. And they're walking in their conga line up on there. So you have one person calling out threat, and when somebody calls out a threat, that's when they start shooting. It reminds me of a military search and destroy mission. You have the so-called servers and protectors going through, taking out threats, meaning the average citizen. And it's really funny because they got a, I think he's a chief of police or something like that. I didn't see a name, you know, in a title or anything, like subtitle. And he's talking about, we are at war. Well, who are they at war with?
Yep.
The population? Does that make them the enemy occupation force? It does. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Thank you for being a fiend. You may know the show is Triggerweens. We're saying worms and your new bigger buttons on. And if you threw a party and invited every yak you knew, you would see we'd still follow the NAP, and we're covered by Bipcot. Thank you for being a fiend.
Freedom Fiend. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Nick and Shane, and we are back. So, Nick, you've had an opportunity to watch the trailer a couple times. What were your impressions on there?
I thought it was interesting. I think it'll be interesting to watch. I'm looking forward to getting to watch it. But yeah, I think it's pretty clear that, and I'm pretty young, so I haven't been able to really watch things happen. But it seems pretty clear that there has been a militarization of the police forces. It's definitely they have more equipment than they used to have, and I think that's kind of scary. And I thought it was interesting in that article, the director's statement, how his dad was a SWAT team member, and they went on 29 calls total, I think, 29 raids.
Hang on. During the 13 years my father was on SWAT from 1989 to 2002, his team conducted 29 search warrants total. Compare that today when departments of a similar size we filmed conducted more than 200 each year.
I mean, that's insane. Like, I don't understand what's changed since then. What's the difference between 1989, you know, the 1990s and the 2010s here? Is there more crime going on? Are there more threats? I'm not convinced that there are. So that's why I'm kind of concerned.
One of the interesting things in here, it shows, some politicians. Rand Paul is one of them, and I guess he's reading from the instruction manual of one of these tactical vehicles that says that's not to be used against civilian population. But if you look at the protests and then the riots in Ferguson, these vehicles were used against protesters. And I'm going to differentiate between the peaceful protesters that were unhappy, dare I even say completely pissed about the cop thuggery that had been going on in that city for quite a long time. And so I'm differentiating between them and then the people that said, hey, here's a reason, go get a new TV. The ones that were burning down the wrong buildings. But anyway, when you have this policy is supposed to be only for emergency. It's only supposed to be for in case of emergency, you break the glass, because that's originally what SWAT was for. It was for hostage situations. It was for bank robberies. It was for major type things. And in the 60s and 70s, when the SWAT teams were just being created, when they were having their first introduction, SWAT raids were very rare. They would go out a couple times a year at the most for actual operations. And these were only in the large cities like Los Angeles, New York, Detroit, Chicago, places like that, places that had more crime, places that had serious crime. And now you have little podunk departments up in Bear, Saskatchewan that get together with the other podunk departments, and they're having joint SWAT teams. And they wind up going and doing raids to go find, like, I don't know, one marijuana plant at some 81-year-old grandmother's place for her medical condition.
Yeah, and I think it's worth mentioning too. And Nick, you made a good point. But most of these SWAT team raids are done in the name of the war on drugs. They're just drug warrants. So crime I don't think it's hasn't necessarily increased. They're just being more aggressive. I mean, they've got to, if they have this equipment, they have to use it. So so yeah, I think it has something to do with the war on drugs, obviously, some sort of a ramping up.
Well, something else, one of the cops in there mentioned, what was it, this is in case of ISIS and all sort of stuff. It really, ISIS is a real threat. If the U.S. government quit funding ISIS, ISIS would dry up. But here they are talking about ISIS, but they haven't gone on any raids after ISIS. They haven't done anything regarding ISIS. Everything that they've done has been kicking in doors of people with pot and all this other crap. As a matter of fact, there's an article that I just saw today. It's in a few different places. It's in WashingtonPost.com, NOLA.com, and anyway, the headline is, police arrest more people for marijuana use than all violent crimes combined. Let me repeat that. Police arrest more people for marijuana use than all violent crimes combined. They're putting all this effort into busting people for possession of a plant. Meanwhile, rape kits are going untested. They're just sitting in an evidence locker, gathering dust, and these rapists are running free. And these victims are not getting this so-called justice that only the government, only the police and the court system can provide. But they're going out and they're kicking in doors. They've declared war on a plant. And how could these idiots declare war on an actual useful plant and leave poison ivy unmolested? But you know what? I'm glad that poison ivy is legal, because if it wasn't, it would be all over the place. Like the illegal stuff. The war on drugs is a jazz program for people that would be cutting grass or washing dishes on the midnight shift at a greasy spoon restaurant somewhere.
Worms.
Well said.
To put on my Minicrest hat, it's when they talk about how they're getting these vehicles to fight ISIS, that does seem like that's the police job, right? Isn't that the Department of Homeland Safetyness or Homeland Defense, whatever it is?
Minister for Staatssicherheit.
Yeah, right. I mean, that doesn't seem like that's the police job. Take off my Minicrest hat, back off. But I think, yeah, the Minicrest dunce cap. I really think this is a great example of Lord Acton's quote of power, absolute power corrupts absolutely. You know, if you give the police an inch, they're going to take 11 more and become rulers.
Yeah. And if you go with the full Lord Acton quote, the idea is that power is magnetic to the already corruptible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a, how could I put it? People expect police to be better than the average person. They expect police to be made of a finer clay than others, to invoke a little bit of Bastiat, but they're just humans. They're mere mortal humans. They're just regular people subject to the same fallibilities and weaknesses that all other humans are subject to. So to invoke a little Mises, if you reject laissez-faire, or in our particular case, individualism and anarchism on the basis of human weakness and fallibility, then you must also reject every action of government for the exact same reasons. And these people are power hungry. It talks in here in the third paragraph of the director's statement. This will be linked in the show notes also. We noticed a trend in early 2014 of police departments being solicited by technology companies offering new tools to help alleviate dwindling operating budgets and loss of personnel. One technology provider we filmed with offered the same IBM platform the NSA uses to collect web communications to police departments for as little as $1,000 per year. Throughout 2014 and 2015, we watched as departments throughout the country adapted the technologies without any guidelines or policy directives governing their use. For all of you statists that believe in checks and balances, this means that there are no checks and balances. There is no balance of power. There is no oversight. There's barely even any hindsight, because most of the people that call for oversight are the ones that say, well, support the thin blue line. If you don't let the cops violate your rights, you hate America. At times, the companies would make the chief of police sign a non-disclosure agreement, preventing them from telling their communities they even had the technologies. This mantra we would continue to hear was that police couldn't let terrorists know the tools they were using to intercept their plots. By terrorists, do they mean what? People who grow pot on their property? The problem is, in 3 years of filming police, there was never an opportunity to use the equipment on domestic terrorism. Instead, the military surplus equipment and surveillance technology were used on a day-to-day basis to serve search warrants, almost always for drugs.
Yeah, and that's funny, because I sent in a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act, a few years ago, and that's the same. It's a national security excuse. I requested. I want to know all communications you've intercepted from me, and it's like, we can neither confirm nor deny for reasons of national security. And that looks like that's exactly what they're invoking here.
Wow.
You know, it's kind of like when, agreement. It's kind of like when the president invokes executive privilege when being asked about something, and the FBI or Department of Injustice invokes national security. That's kind of like the statocrat's version of the Fifth Amendment, the right not to incriminate themselves. Because that's what they would be doing, is they would be incriminating. But mm-hmm. you have all these bootlicking conservatives that say, oh, well, we have to trust the police. It's for our safety. And and those are the same ones that when some liberal says, oh, no, we have to outlaw guns for safetiness, they'll be the first ones to say, what is it, the Ben Franklin quote, that if you trade freedom for security, you'll get neither.
Yep.
You know, what's really funny, I was talking to one of these conservatives online not too long ago, and she said, I'm willing to trade a little freedom for security, but I know you're probably just going to drop that Ben Franklin quote of, you know, if you trade freedom for security, you'll get neither. And my question was, okay, if you know that that's the case, then why are you still willing to trade freedom for something that you won't get? And I never got a response to it. And it's... there's really such a lack of thinking on the part of people. I wonder how we have electricity today. I wonder how we have the internet. Heck, I wonder how half of them manage to keep breathing without having a flashing neon sign telling them to keep breathing at all times.
Yeah, or the government not giving them their breathing mask, walking with them on their daily tasks. Yeah.
So. Do you guys have any more opinions or observations on the trailer or the director's statement?
There was one thing, and it was in the next paragraph, and quote, in hindsight, it's not hard to understand how we arrived at the current state of policing in America. Since 9/11, the federal government has given police departments more than $40 billion in equipment with no stipulations on how it should be deployed or any reporting requirements. Additionally, the federal government created a loophole that allowed police departments to keep the majority of the money and property seized during search warrants. So he mentioned civil asset forfeiture, and I'm glad that's finally being brought to the mainstream.
You can't expect a person to do the right thing when their salary depends upon them doing the wrong thing.
Bingo.
Feinstein, the police.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
This is Lou, and I'm joined by Nick and Shane. And we're going to do a little redemption in the third act for the first hour. And this is a positive story of the police, meaning they couldn't be reached and nothing, and they didn't do anything. This comes to us from ABC News. And there was for those of you that don't know, there was a hurricane that just hit the southeastern portion of the USSA recently, and Eric Olson of Omaha, Nebraska told ABC News today that he became extremely worried when he wasn't able to reach his 87-year-old grandmother, Claire Olson, who lives alone in Palm Coast, Florida, after the storm roared through the area on Saturday. Well, I talked to her on Friday morning, and she had just lost power, and she said, "This is a nightmare," Eric Olson told ABC News today. And then we didn't hear from her for 2 days. He added, "I was calling the police department, I was calling the sheriff's department, and no one was answering, so I was really worried." On Sunday, when he still wasn't able to reach her, he decided to get creative. So I just said, "I'm going to order her a pizza, and if they could deliver it, then I know she's alive," Eric Olson said. He said he wrote a special instruction when he placed the pizza order, asking the delivery person to call his phone when the pizza was delivered. He then asked the delivery man to give his cell phone to Claire Olson so he could hear from her and make sure she was okay. Eric Olson said when he heard his grandma's voice on the other end, he felt relief, absolute relief. Police and fire couldn't do it, but Papa John's got there in 30 minutes and put the cell phone to her ear. "Papa John's, we'll get your pizza and find your grandmother in 30 minutes or less." Or it's free. I don't know if it's free, but oh my God, this is hilarious. For crying out loud, the old joke is that if you call the police or the pizza man will get there first and he won't shoot your dog. And on this, he gets there first and he finds your grandmother.
Exactly. Yeah, that's pretty incredible. Yeah, it just shows you obviously the incompetency of the police, and then the voluntary interaction of someone simply purchasing a pizza.
Yeah, and she said it was probably the best pizza that she'd ever had. But it says here, he says he got the idea to order the pizza spontaneously. "I was just thinking, who can go there right now? Who can I call in a city where I know no one?" He added, "People were asking why I didn't call the police and ask them to do a wellness check. But I did. Trust me, Papa John's was the last resort. Apparently, it should have been the first resort."
Well, now he knows in the future.
Yeah, there's a... You guys are familiar with Jimmy John's, the sandwich chain, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, they've got a commercial, and in this commercial, their delivery guy talks really fast and everything because their motto is freaky fast, freaky good. So anyway, in this commercial, this guy calls the fire department, and the guy shows up to deliver the sandwich, and he says, "By the way, sir, you know your house is on fire." And the guy says, "Yeah, I know. That's why I called you. Grab a bucket." And the guy says, we're going to need more help. So he calls back to the... restaurant, says, "Hey, make one of each type of sandwich and send it on over here." And so they got all these different delivery people saying, "Sandwich is here. All right, here, grab a bucket." And then finally, the fire department shows up and says, "Well, why didn't you call us first?" And the guy says, "We did." So you have fast food workers outperforming the people that, you know, that work for the government, the ones that we would die without them.
The professional police, you know, the professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The ones standing between you and, I don't know, happiness. Efficient traffic.
Ballad.
Top men.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Top men, or the only ones. They are the only ones that can check on your grandmother. How dare you call the pizza guy?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to remember that. Call Papa John's.
What's that?
I'm going to remember that. It's a call Papa John's instead of the police. Next time I need to check up on somebody.
Or Jimmy John's.
Call Jimmy John's.
I don't know if they're related, though.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
But anyway, Eric Olson is in Nebraska. His father's in South Dakota and his sister's in Los Angeles. There were no relatives nearby that could go check on his grandmother. So, pizza delivery man Lance Tyler, thank you for your food service. Went out there and made the connection between this young man and his grandmother. He said her expression was priceless. We'll be back, second hour. We'll be right back.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
It's the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIBCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments or their agents. Learn more at BIBCOT.org. And we're back, the second hour of the Freedom Fiends. It's me, Nick Hazelton, and Lusander Fien and Shane Radliff of the Liberty Under Attack radio show. How you guys doing?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me on your show tonight, Nick.
doing great.
Absolutely. So we're coming back with a second hour. We're coming back with an article from the Ron Paul Liberty Report.com by Chris Rossini titled "A government filled with the best people is pure make-believe." And I guess I didn't think this far ahead if I'm giving out reading assignments or if I should just jump into it. But it's been a while since I've been on a microphone.
Bleed.
All right, I'll take this. I'll read the first few paragraphs and we can comment on some of them. If only the government were filled with the right people or the best people, we wouldn't have the problems that we have today. You've heard that line, haven't you? Far too many people cling to such a false hope, even after a solid century of the U.S. government leading us through its long downward spiral. There have been many elections over the last century that could have installed the best people. Why doesn't it ever happen?
I want to interrupt.
Sure, go ahead.
The downward spiral has been a 2.25 century endeavor. Continue.
Yeah, I would say. After a solid century. Now it's a solid two. Two and a quarter. Okay. Yes, I suppose you're right there. I can't do math. I dropped out of school.
Punk juvenile delivery.
I can't do math, and I went through all the way through public school. So.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Well, it doesn't happen.
Mathdom. Yes.
Well, it doesn't happen because the strong tendency of people wanting something for nothing doesn't go away. And it wouldn't matter because of the nature of government necessarily turns the best people into the worst while they're in office. And call back to that Lord Acton quote. Take Thomas Jefferson as a great example. He was a giant figure while outside of government, yet a disaster as president. With political power at his disposal, he acted as a different man than the one who penned the Declaration of Independence. Jefferson most likely knew it, too. On his headstone, he had the following engraved: author of the Declaration of Independence, of the Statute of Virginia for Religious Freedom, and father of the University of Virginia. Notice no mention of being the third president of the United States. Power corrupts even the best people. I don't know if Thomas Jefferson was that great. He said some cool things, I guess, but he still owned slaves.
Like most great men, his actions never lived up to his words, his rhetoric, and his mythology. And that's what it is mythology.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, that actions don't match the rhetoric, but I mean, just look at the types of people that attempt to go into governments. I mean, these people I guess for the most part. I mean, some going with the naive idea that they can infiltrate the NAACP and turn into the KKK or vice versa, and think that they can actually make that change. But a lot of it, whether we talked about militarized police in the first hour, whether it's that arm of the government or whether it's politicians, look at the people that go for these positions. They really aren't that great of people.
No, yeah. It's not. It's generally, how was it Lord of the Rings guy, Tolkien, put it? He says, my political opinions lean more and more towards anarchy. The most improper role of men, even saints, is the bossing of other men. Not one in a million is fit for the task, least of all those that seek the opportunity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it seems like the people who really want to take charge of things and control people are really the people you don't want to have in charge. You can see that in the smallest of organizations too. Like even in a small school, right? The worst people cling to power, it seems. So why do we keep trying to get these great people into office if these people never do anything to benefit or to actually do something to make any positive difference with government? You know, it never happens. So why do we keep trying? I shouldn't say we. little mouse in my pocket. But you know, why do people do this? Why do you do this, listeners? If you do try to find the best people to elect.
What do you mean, we, Nick? Yeah, you have a yak in your, do you have a yak in your pocket? It's this whole, and this is something that our good friend Ben Stone has talked about with the great man theory, or as I call it, the great man fallacy. There's this belief that there are just the right people, because usually the quote is government filled with just the right people, because people say, and it does say it here in the first sentence, if only government were filled with the right people. The fact is, there are no right people for this. And what's really amazing is you can have somebody, even like a Ron Paul mini-statist type person, that can explain to you about economic calculation, that can explain to you about the pretense of knowledge and the fatal conceit. And they can absolutely destroy central planning and central control by the state as far as state socialism goes, but they can't put two and two together and come up with the four of government being socialistic in nature, because it does survive through central planning and central control. Not specifically the means of production, but of the activities of your daily life, of what you can do. As an example, if you look at a regulated market, once you have a single regulation, it doesn't matter if it's a good regulation, if it has the best of intentions and could possibly work, it is no longer a free market. Plain and simple. Once you introduce the invasive species of regulation, you no longer have a free market. You have a controlled market. And it doesn't matter if that regulation, government regulation, says you can't steal from your customers. It's no longer a free market. Now, I'm not advocating that businesses should be able to steal from their customers. I'm just using this to illustrate a point. And quite frankly, not stealing from your customers is a market demand. So there's really not a reason for a regulation to do it. And quite frankly, the regulations have enabled companies to steal from their customers.
Yeah.
Particularly when it comes to making purchasing these products mandatory, or when it eliminates choice in who can provide these services.
And I guess there's one Mises quote that I've been searching for forever, but it's out of Human Action, obviously. But quote, the market economy, or capitalist, as it is usually called, and the socialist economy preclude one another. There is no mixture of the two systems possible or thinkable. There is no such thing as a mixed economy, a system that would be in part capitalistic and in part socialist. But I wanted to make one point on that article, and this is something that I've kind of come across in my own personal life. Well, Shane, I don't trust individuals to run their own lives. Well, if you don't trust individuals to run their own lives, then how does it make any sense whatsoever to put these same fallible individuals into positions of power where they can terrorize the world, such as the Western powers have done for quite a long time? How does it make any sense to put these fallible human beings into those positions of power? It just doesn't make sense. But again, I think statism, one of the major issues with statists is that they don't take things to their logical conclusion.
Right. And statism is a religious faith. And let me go back to the quote from the first tower. If you reject laissez-faire, or in our case, anarchism, on the basis of human weakness and fallibility, then you must also reject every action of government for the exact same reasons. Once again, from Ludwig von Mises, who, strangely enough, never wound up an anarchist, but I think if he had lived long enough and seen the internet and got on Facebook and would have been friends with us, I think he would have changed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and yeah, he did come from Europe, so I think he kind of had the, I guess, and I'll go ahead and just say it in this way, like the Ayn Rand anarchist syndrome, where what they saw in Europe was more of the socialistic or communistic variety, and they never really saw or, I guess, interacted too much with folks from the proprietarian anarchist perspective.
Yeah, well, I don't think that there was really a whole lot of, like, anarcho-capitalistic type maybe. Anarchism, probably until Murray Rothbard. I could be wrong. I think a lot of it was definitely leftist, but I think there were also a little bit of individualistic stuff, but it wasn't as prevalent as it is today. It was generally the lefty anarchists.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Yeah.
But going back to this notion of the having the right people, as mentioned in the article, and I think one of you guys may have brought it up separately, it's like there's a prophecy that there will be the right people that will bring balance to the force of government, and that they will make things right. And now, granted, it never happens. It's kind of like some of these doomsday prophecies of the Mayan calendar or Hale Bopp or, I don't know, some end of the world 2012 type thing. And with the religion of Christianity, Christianity promises a Messiah that will come to save everything, well, after it destroys everything. But Christianity promises a Messiah that will come at an unknown time. But statism promises multiple Messiahs that will come every 2, 4, and 6 years. And it is part of this faith that just the right people would arrive. And When you accept that there is no right person to do these things, when you understand that there is no person or group of people that would have the knowledge to be capable of being the central planners, whether you call it the central planning committee or whether you call it your representation, once you realize that that's impossible, your faith has been shaken, it has been destroyed, your faith in this notion of the state, the republic, the government, and the Constitution granting authority. And quite frankly, most people not only think that it grants authority, but they also think that it grants capability.
Yeah, and I think I guess we're come to this break, but I think something else that comes into it is the fact that some people are just too lazy that they don't want to run their own lives. They'd rather put that in the hands of somebody else, and therefore statism.
Let's talk about that when we come back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
We're back. This This is the Freedom Fiends. This is Nick Hazelton, the anarcho-yakalist, here with Lusander Fien and Shane Radliff. And we're back. We're talking about an article from the Ron Paul something or other. I don't remember what it is. Liberty Hour. And Shane brought up this interesting point. I think rings really, really true about how, on one end, people want to control others, and that's why, you know, people get into government, but there's also people who want others to control them. And you can see that a lot on both sides of the spectrum, the left and right, because it's not really that different. Where the conservatives want the government to protect them from their moral outrages, and they want them to have a police force to keep, you know, keep the drugs out of the schools and streets and, you know, whatever it is. And the liberals want the government to protect them from not having enough money or the ability, the wits to find a way to get into a college or something like that, to you know, whatever it is. So I thought it was an interesting point. I'll let you take it from here, Shane.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, obviously it's much easier. It takes a lot less work to simply hand off responsibility to somebody else than to take responsibility for yourself and your well-being. Now, government's a great way to offset that. I mean, rather than worrying about your health care, worrying about your financial situation, government's a great way to offset all of that responsibility. Now, I guess take the welfare state, for example. Rather than producing value in the free market, in the market economy, and I guess funding their own lives, it's much easier to just simply receive government handouts. So I think, and you can see this in other areas as well. I mean, shorter attention spans, the ever increasing people dependent on welfare. And you can definitely see that people would rather just rely on the government for these things than take the responsibility themselves. Now, I don't think I'm off base in saying that. And if you, I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
Go ahead, Nick.
Worms.
Well, that's a well thought out reply. my thoughts on this, and I was recently discussing this with somebody at AgoraFest. We were talking about prepping, and not just like the crazy doomsday zombie apocalypse prepper type stuff, but the in case of really bad weather, knocks out electricity for 3 or 4 days, things like that. And this is something that I've experienced in my lifetime, where bad storms came through, and particularly in a place like Florida, where you know you're going to have this pretty much annually, it's a good idea to have the large water cans and fill them up with fresh water. If you have the hard plastic water cans, they're less likely to be damaged. Whereas just going and buying a bunch of 1 gallon jugs at Wally World, those bottles break pretty easily. It's like the milk cartons. So if you have heavy duty winds or something like that, and something gets blown into them during the storm, they're going to break and they're going to leak all over the place. But if you have like the hard plastic ones that you can get in the camping section for like $13 a piece, they hold 6 gallons, and you don't have to worry so much about them breaking. They're not going to break easily is the point. But if you know that you live in Florida and you go out and buy boards in advance, and you have water and you have canned goods and things like that, stuff that's not going to be perishable, stuff that's not going to get destroyed in the bad weather and the wind and things like that, you're going to be a lot better off. You're going to be prepared. And now, of course, if you really love the economy and you think that stimulus is a good idea, you should not put boards over your windows. just put the boards over your windows if you hate the economy, if you hate the glazier. But it's pretty simple. You think people do that, but when you look at the promise of FEMA coming in and taking care of folks, and the promise of the Red Cross and Walmart bringing in stuff, it's amazing the number of people that don't prepare, and it's precisely because they have the option not to.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Go ahead, Nick.
It doesn't make sense to me. I guess I was kind of raised with this individualist attitude. On that the person that's more likely or the most likely to look after yourself is going to be yourself. Why would you rely on somebody else? They have to cover their needs first, right? And it's going to take a little while for these people who are specially trained, these FEMA people, to get there. Like, why wouldn't you rely on yourself? I don't see any excuse not to. It just doesn't make sense to me why you would just rely on other people to take care of you, because they're not always going to be there.
It's really part of that faith in the state that they are there to take care of you, and the right people will get the help that you need to you immediately.
Yep.
It's called being a statistic. We'll be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
We're here and we're back. I don't know what segment this is like the third segment. Second segment. Third segment of
third segment the second of the fourth hour.
Of the fourth hour. We're back. It's the Freedom Fiends. This is Nick Hazelton. I'm here with Lusander Fiend and Shane Radliff of the Liberty Under Your Attack radio show. Is that what you call it, the radio show, right?
Yeah, we have Liberty Under Attack radio. No, there's an archive feed, but we do a lot of broadcasts too. So,
okay. If you haven't heard those productions, go to, I think it's libertyunderattack.com. And check out that archive, because it's definitely one of my favorite shows. I don't think we talked about it at all, but I'll plug it for you, Shane.
Well, I appreciate it. I certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, so we're talking about government and why people don't take responsibility for their own safety and, I guess, well-being. In general, they don't take responsibility for themselves in general, and they don't have to all the time, or at least it doesn't seem like they have to, because the government's there to help you out in your times of need. If you lose your job, there's unemployment. If you didn't store enough gasoline for the hurricane, FEMA will come and provide it for you, right?
Yeah. if you aren't dead before they get there, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I want to go back to what I was talking about before the commercial. I was talking to a guy out at Anarchon, and we were discussing these different things. And if, like, where I live, it's a rural backwoods kind of area, and you have more of the individualist mindset, and you also have a tighter sense of community. Most of the people here know each other, and I think a lot of them are related, and that's why a lot of them look alike. But anyway, they all play the
banjo.
The
roads are muddy in Bear Saskatchewan.
the family tree up here looks kind of like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree. But anyway, up here you have a lot more of the self reliant people, or the people that are. That would rely a little bit more on some of their neighbors, because I think just about everybody up here has a store of food. A lot of people, they go out and they hunt, they fish, they have gardens, and they can their own food. They preserve different things. You know, a lot of them will make jerky out of venison, things like that. It's much more of a self-reliant, and those are people that are more likely to be prepared in the event of a storm knocking out power for a few days. Because let's face it, looking at the population numbers and probably the businesses that are up here, if there was a major storm to take things out, Bear Saskatchewan would probably be a low priority compared to some of the bigger cities. Not that there's a heck of a lot of big cities in the area, but you know where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. If there was, as an example, with the population here, if this was on the coast and there was a hurricane, it would be a low priority as far as getting power back up and taking care of everything, just because of the sheer numbers, the low numbers of people here.
Yeah, it's the same case where I live, too.
Yeah. So we were discussing, and one of the things that I had brought up is that humans are not, as a species, are not overly industrious. They're not the type to really work hard, and it really takes an incentive to work hard. And what I mean by this is, if you look at the number of people that have the entrepreneurial spirit, those that are looking to go out and work for themselves and make their own way in the world versus go out and get a job, put their 40 hours in, and leave their work at the job when they go home, you know, not have to worry about, let somebody else worry about those sorts of things. You see that people, you know, in general are not the real go-getter types. It's a small minority of the population that does that. Now, when you throw in government and the welfare and the assistance and things like that, what that does is that creates a disincentive against being prepared. It's a disincentive against self-reliance and taking care of yourself. And as I'd mentioned in the last segment, it's part of that faith in the state that they will provide for you in the event of emergency. And both the left and the right have always made these promises. The left probably a little bit more so, but the right, they call it compassionate conservatism, and they call it efficient government, of FEMA being able to deliver goods and services and relief supplies and all this other crap. And just like trading freedom for security, you get neither. So when you trade your security for FEMA assistance and relief, you wind up with, I don't know, going and drinking out of a mud puddle.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely do think it depends on obviously the place that you live. Most people live in cities now, and I think that has an impact on it. But we have property in southern Illinois, and it's in the middle of nowhere. And yeah, you were talking about the way people look there where you live, Lou, and I think it's pretty similar there. But yeah, most people there would be perfectly fine. They know they're far enough out that government's not going to come and save them. So they take responsibility for it themselves. But I think when it comes to cities, government's right there. Government's right there, and that false notion that they will come and save them. But yeah, I think location is certainly certainly a factor.
Yeah. Well, also when you look at the false promises, it's kind of like this whole notion of hoping that just the right people will be in charge, or hoping that if you vote really hard this time that there'll be a change. People have this faith that there will eventually be just the right people, and the Constitution will be restored, and unicorns will drop steak dinners from the sky or something. I don't know. It's but it is this faith in the state. And until you've been burned bad enough, until you've been burned enough times, and until you get past this notion of the great man, the savior, the government messiah, you're going to keep making the same mistakes over and over again. And I don't know what it is. I look at how many elections there have been, and quite frankly, this is George Washington's 90-something term, because nothing has really changed.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely not. Definitely not. things aren't getting better, and especially, I mean, yeah, they're definitely getting worse. Just look at the clowns that are trying to get that ring of power now.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, as somebody who makes jokes about politics and politicians on live radio, I consider this election to be a gold mine. But I told this to somebody earlier today, and they were absolutely shocked that I said it. If you look at the degradation of the political system, if you look at how the electoral system has just become such a Schumer show this cycle, it's really not a whole lot different than the previous election cycles. It's just a lot more obvious. But when you look at the idiocy and the foolishness, Romney and Obama were, it was like mental midget wrestling in 2012. And it was absolutely horrible.
It was pretty mild.
Yeah, it wasn't as obnoxious, but it was certainly stupidity. This time is stupidity and obnoxiousness. But what I told to my coworker earlier today, I says, if you think this one's bad, just wait until 2020. Because I would be willing to bet that the next one is going to be even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it will be.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I've seen some of the people I know here where I live. A lot of them are even saying things like, this election is a joke, we're screwed. And and if they're seeing it, that's definitely a good thing. But I still think a lot of those folks will still go out and choose a lesser of two evils. So anytime I get a chance, I post the Kansas City voter registration page just to make sure that they know there's another option and not participate at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and something else, I was chatting with my neighbor the other day, and he finds the candidates completely intolerable all around. He thinks Trump and Hillary are absolute idiots, buffoons, the root of all evil, and you name it. And he has a very low opinion of them. He doesn't think much of Johnson or Stein. And then when you start getting into all the other people, I can't even name any of the other candidates. The only reason I know of Johnson and Stein is because they're both repeats. They're both recycled from last election. But so anyway, as I'm talking to him about this, he says, so what are you supposed to do, just not vote? And I'm like, well, yeah. Yeah, because I think about this. If you find the candidates, if you find the options that you have in front of you to be intolerable, and you still go out and vote, and you pick one of these intolerable people, you're either just a glutton for punishment, or you're doing it just for the sake of going through the motions, as if doing the process has some sort of actual value, and ignoring the fact that the result is going to be you're endorsing and embracing one of these scumbags to be your ruler.
I did something, sense? Guys. I went and checked the box.
I voted really hard. I voted my ass off. And it's absolutely horrible. I can't see why people do it, and they do it just to go through the motions, to be a part of the process, to get their little sticker that says I voted or something. I contributed to my own enslavement.
Yep, there you go. That's pretty much what I was going to say. Yep.
And matter of fact, I'd like to drop a quote from Wendy McElroy here. Voting is not an act of political freedom. It is an act of political conformity. Those who refuse to vote are not expressing silence. They are screaming in the politician's ear, you do not represent me. This is not a process in which my voice matters. I do not believe you. And I would also throw in, I don't trust you. And on top of that, I would throw in, I don't believe in the great man fallacy. I don't believe that there are just the right people. I don't believe that you can scribble the right words in the right order on a magic piece of parchment that will stop bad things from happening. And I don't believe that magic parchment will give you the capability to do what humans are not capable of doing.
Well said. Well said.
Thank you. Warriors. Thank you. I pull it off every once in a while.
Yeah, I'd say. I totally agree. I don't think I have anything to add. I guess. I guess I would say that it's. I guess here we go. I think that. Well, I'd like to bring this up next segment, and I think it'll play into Redemption in the Third Act. Talk about how the free market and how you can do something without voting. There are other things you can do to benefit your community or the world.
We call Papa John's.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dana yeah. And his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
And there existed stickers. They used to not exist. Now they exist.
That's funny.
DJ, how do you like the Fiend stickers on our coffee pot?
They're gorgeous.
Yes. What do they say?
State speech is hate speech. And BIPCOT.org.
Yeah, and people can get them by going to freedomfiends.com and clicking on the new link at the top. It says stickers. And there will be more designs. So check back regularly. Catch them all.
Worms.
Worms.
of the Freedom Fiends radio show. This is Nick Hazelton. I'm here with Lusander Fiend and Shane Bradler. And we're going to bring back some redemption here. I'd like to go back to the article we were reading earlier. And there's a couple paragraphs here. They're separate and they're not they're not right next to each other. It doesn't follow in line, so I'm just going to read them separately. But I like this one. With very few exceptions, the best people do not go into government for this reason. And the reason before is that power corrupts even the best people. They are instead working hard in the real world, solving real problems. Their focus is on voluntary service and creating wealth, not wielding force. I really, really like that. And the next one is, the best people are not interested in hollow praise or corruption. They're often very humble and interested in actually doing something of value. Their work gets put on a pedestal, not their petty egos. And this is what you see politicians do, is they have to defend their character when they get up onto the stage, right? They're not really talking about, and I guess they do talk about these things that they've done. But you notice that they have to talk about it themselves. They don't, the work doesn't speak for themselves, for itself, right? And that's why I think it's disappointing, to see people put so much faith in politicians, even though we all know that politicians lie, right? That's a pretty common, stereotype. And it's very true. That's the thing. So it's disappointing to see that. Though I think a lot of people in the free market, the people who are actually working on creative solutions do get a lot of praise. It's disappointing that we have to, come back to this every 4 years, have these debates about this meaningless, people when we could be focusing on something else. People who are actually working on creative things. And I realize this is supposed to be redemption. But there really are people who are working on some great things in the marketplace, and I personally am involved in the permaculture, regenerative, sustainable agriculture movement, and there's some really neat things going on with people who, like we brought up maybe a couple segments ago about self-reliance, really creating systems that are self-reliant and able to provide people food without crazy inputs, right? Like most agriculture needs. So I think that's a great thing that's going on in the marketplace. People figuring out how to sustain themselves on their own. And I'm sure there are many more. And what are your guys' thoughts on that?
Well, I think you made a good point, and I can't tell you how many times. I mean, it's pretty much constant. Any time I'm around people in public, it seems like they're complaining about government, about something, and no one trusts politicians. So you're definitely correct. I don't know why this has to continue in this cycle over and over again. But yeah, there are definitely some fantastic things being done out there. The one I'm most interested in is like financial independence and early retirement, rather than working till you're 65, working until you're 40 or 45 and living off of passive income streams. Jake DeSillis has done some great work on that. I think that's extremely freeing, and just consider how much extra time folks in the alternative media would have to spend on finding more solutions if they didn't have to work for 40, 50, 60 hours a week on a job they don't really want to do, when they could be spending it on something that they're passionate about. So yeah, there are definitely some great things happening out there in pursuit of freedom.
I would like to suggest the rejection of the necessity of a centralized authority. And I will give you a prime example. If you look at the internet, there's no better example of spontaneous order. When the internet came about, there wasn't some central planner commanding, build a website for this, build a website for that. This is a content we should have. No, not that many web pages of this.
Wasn't that Al Gore?
When you ask who invented the internet or who created the internet, what you have to ask is who made it what it is today. And this, yes. The internet is the contributions of millions, possibly billions of individuals doing their own thing. And nobody forces you to go to a particular website. Nobody forces you to watch a video. You choose to do it, and the ones that succeed are the ones that have won the market share through their accomplishments.
So that is thanks true. For, there, there's oh, go ahead, Luke.
So anyway, thanks for coming on tonight, guys. Nick, thanks for having me on your show tonight. And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com. For more Liberty Under Attack, go to libertyunderattack.com. And for more of Nick's stuff, if he gets back at his podcast, go to and-yak.com.